The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
US media have quoted people associated with the Defense Intelligence Agency as saying that the US strikes did not fully eliminate Iran's nuclear bases. The strikes sealed off entrances to some facilities without destroying underground buildings. Iran's nuclear program would be just set back a couple of months, according to this reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump has expressed anger at those U.S. media reports. Now, joining us to talk about this and other developments in the Middle East is Greg Karlstrom, Middle East correspondent with The Economist. Greg, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Now, let's talk about the provenance of that intelligence, first of all. I mean, CNN widely quoted, it was picked up by other media outlets as well. So they are taking it as probably accurate.
They are, but I think there are a few caveats that are worth mentioning. The agency that this came from, the Defense Intelligence Agency, it's the Pentagon's intelligence arm. So obviously it's considered a very credible source, but it's only one of numerous agencies within America's intelligence community. This is only one of the reports that's being commissioned to try to assess the damage from these strikes. It's specifically labeled as a low confidence assessment, which means the people writing it aren't confident that their conclusions are correct. It's a preliminary report based largely on satellite intelligence. And it's a report that many of the journalists quoting haven't actually seen. They are relying on secondhand accounts, what they've heard from either people in the intelligence community or congressional staffers, other people who might have been briefed on the report, but it's secondhand reporting on something that even the authors say they don't have much confidence in.
So when are we likely to get better intelligence on this? And will it have to be intelligence from maybe Israeli spies on the ground in Tehran before there is definitive information?
I think it's going to be some time. And for exactly what you mentioned there, I mean, trying to assess the damage to deeply buried underground facilities based on satellite imagery from above, it's difficult to do. You can glean some things from overhead photos, but the questions that are important right now, what is the fate of the centrifuges, devices that enrich uranium at Natanz and Fort Doe? How much of Iran's enriched uranium was being stored underground at these facilities? Those are questions that you really need eyes on the ground to answer, whether those come from human spies or whether they come from the IAEA, the UN's nuclear watchdog, which I'm sure in the next few days is going to ask Iran if it can begin resuming inspections of these facilities. But I think until you get some eyes on the ground, it's going to be very hard to know for sure what happens.
Now, Iran has threatened to leave the IAEA, if it does that, then they will have no obligation to report to the IAEA where any of their resources are.
And even if they don't, I think it's don't leave the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, leave the agency. Even if they don't do that, I think it's going to be difficult for the IAEA to have a comprehensive picture now of what's happening with Iran's nuclear program. You take the question of its uranium stockpile. It had about 400 kilograms of uranium that had been enriched to 60% purity, which is very close to weapons grade. Before the war started, the IAEA thought it knew where all of that uranium was in underground tunnels at various facilities. But there's a chance now that some of it has been moved. We don't know where it's been moved to. And Iran, which is now very suspicious of the IAEA, which has accused it with no evidence, but has accused it of leaking information to the Israelis, I think they're not going to be inclined to fully cooperate. Even if they don't toss the inspectors out altogether, they're not going to fully cooperate with them.
Now, the intelligence, which is described as leaked intelligence, and we know that everything that goes on under the Trump administration is always political. We saw the way Tulsi Gabbard had to reverse her testimony of last March, saying that Iran was nowhere near a nuclear weapon. So presumably, again, this leaked intelligence, even with low confidence, the administration is embarrassed by it. Witkoff wants the person who leaked it to be tried for treason. So no doubt the next agency that reports is going to give a very positive and glowing account of what was accomplished.
Right. I'm sure there is that pressure internally, and that is how you end up getting the sorts of bad intelligence assessments that preceded the Iraq War in 2003, for example. But I think interesting question now is, why was this leaked, right? Was it leaked by people who wanted to embarrass the administration, who wanted to undercut President Trump when he makes these claims that everything was obliterated, which are claims that are obviously incorrect? Or was it someone almost trying to do the opposite? Was it someone who wants the war to continue, perhaps, who wants a bigger American or Israeli campaign meant to not just damage Iran's nuclear facilities, but to try and topple the regime entirely? Was this leaked with the intent of putting wind in their sails, if you will, sort of making the case that airstrikes alone can't destroy Iran's nuclear facilities, and therefore there needs to be a bigger push to get rid of the regime?
So this would give Netanyahu the a reason to continue to target Iran, even though the ceasefire so far, it appears, is holding. But given that Donald Trump is now on record, and we all saw the speech with the three boyos following him out to the rostrum to announce the obliteration of Iran's nuclear capability, you know, that's on the record. If it turns out it wasn't true, what's he going to say? I was wrongly informed by Vance. I was wrongly informed by Hegseth. It's deeply embarrassing for the president if it turns out that obliteration was not complete.
It's deeply embarrassing for him. And right, of course, Donald Trump never admits that he made a mistake. So he's going to find someone to blame this on. But then it puts him, I think, in a very difficult domestic political position where he's already come in for criticism from many of his supporters, many of, you know, his so-called MAGA acolytes, who are nervous about America getting dragged into a bigger war in the Middle East. Trump was very insistent that this was just going to be a one-off strike, and it worked, and it obliterated all of Iran's nuclear facilities. But if it didn't do that, and he suddenly has to decide between either resuming the strikes, maybe triggering that sort of bigger war that his supporters don't want, or climbing down and admitting that he failed and that American military force didn't work. I mean, that's not an easy political decision for him to make.
Now, within Iran, we see they've executed three Israeli spies, or so they claim. They've also arrested 700 Israeli mercenaries. And there's no doubt that Israel has had eyes on the ground. It has infiltrated Iran at perhaps even the highest levels. But now you have a roundup of perhaps the usual suspects. What's going on there?
Deep paranoia. I think the regime is going to, for weeks and months to come, be very inwardly focused. It's not going to be in a position to try and threaten Israel, threaten its neighbors, project power in the region. It's going to need to try and shore up its control at home. And it's deeply by the fact that, as you say, Israel has penetrated the highest levels of the Iranian security services, the Iranian nuclear program. So they are going to be on a hunt for collaborators and infiltrators, but they are going to use that, I think, to round up what you call the usual suspects, sort of anyone who is a critic of the regime. It's going to be a very paranoid, very repressive time, I think, in Iranian politics.
Now, I suppose the talking point overnight was Trump's use of the F word, which did seem to be spontaneous rather than a deliberate ploy to catch all the headlines again. He genuinely seemed annoyed with Israel. They unloaded. As soon as we got the deal, they unloaded. In other words, they took that little interregnum between announcing the ceasefire and its implementation to use massive armaments, munitions against Tehran. And he seemed to be genuinely annoyed. Is there any tension at all between Netanyahu and Trump, the real tension that might be damaging to Israel, given that support for Israel in the United States is now at a 25-year low?
I do think the personal tension was real yesterday between Trump and Netanyahu. The bargain that Trump made when he approved these American strikes on Iran over the weekend was basically, I'm going to do this, but once I do this, I have ownership of the war. It's not Israel's war against Iran anymore. It's America's war, and I decide when it's going to end. And he wanted it to end almost immediately after those strikes. So when the Israelis turned around and tried to do one last big barrage of airstrikes on Iran, that personally upset Trump. And then I think beyond that, you have a broader frustration with the Israeli prime minister, again, from many of Trump's supporters who think that Israel essentially dragged the United States into this conflict, that Netanyahu started a war that he didn't really know how to end. Israel didn't have an end game when it started this war. It wanted American involvement as its eventual way out, because only America had the bombs that were able to sort of deeply enough to damage Fordo, the nuclear facility at Fordo. And so there's a lot of frustration with Netanyahu from Republicans, from people who would, you know, otherwise you would think be reasonably pro-Israel, but they're frustrated that the Israeli government pulled Donald Trump into this fight.
Greg Carlson, Middle East correspondent with The Economist, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.